CodeWinds, Episode 12, Reflections of JSConf 2014, Part 1. Welcome to the CodeWinds podcast, where we cover leading-edge web developer news and training with an emphasis on Node, JavaScript, and HTML5. My name is Jeff Barczewski, and I am here to help you navigate the winds of change. In this episode, Kevin Old joins me to reflect on our experience at JSConf 2014 and to highlight some of our favorite talks from the conference. Most of the videos from JSConf are now available on YouTube, so if something sounds interesting, you can find them there. The links and show notes for this podcast are available at codewinds.com/12, as in episode 12. Today I'm joined by my good friend Kevin Old, a full-stack JavaScript developer and one of the co-organizers for Nodevember, the new Node conference in Nashville, Tennessee. Welcome, Kevin.
Hello, Jeff. How are you?
Good. Thanks for joining me tonight.
Absolutely. Glad to reminisce.
Yeah. So, Kevin, you're one of the co-organizers for the Nodevember conference in Nashville, Tennessee. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, it's a new conference we've started here in Nashville. It's going to be this November, it's going to be November 15th and 16th. We're hoping to have a conference track, three tracks with Node, JavaScript, Nodebots, etc. So we want to have a regional conference based here in Nashville that will draw and answer the need for talks throughout the JavaScript community.
Yeah, that sounds really good. I know you've been working with some of the Chris Williams and some of the founder of JSConf and also Michael Rogers, I think, has also been advising. So you guys got some good advice there on the getting things going for NodeConf.
Right. Yeah. Chris is very open with sharing his knowledge about running conferences and what it takes, and all you have to do is reach out and ask. So we're certainly happy to have his input. All the information's at nodevember.org.
Awesome. Well, tonight we thought we would look back at JSConf 2014. Kevin and I were honored to be able to be there this year, and actually we met last year at JSConf 2013. So that's when we became friends, and it was great to be able to come back to Amelia Island and just enjoy the conference. So we thought we would share a little bit of our experience and our reflections on JSConf 2014.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the venue is one of the main things about JSConf.
Yeah, it's just a beautiful place to be. Amelia Island, the Omni Hotel there is great. Having the ocean there and all the beach and everything is just it's a beautiful place to be. And so anyway, we thought we'd go back and kind of reminisce on the schedule and how things kind of went and some of our favorite things at the talks and that. So Kevin, let's see. So you got there a little bit early, and you were able to unwind a little bit before the conference started. So that's how'd that work out for you?
It was great. The beautiful thing about where JSConf is hosted right now in Amelia Island is the fact that you can take your family. You can pair it up with a vacation before or after, which I saw a number of people doing. It was a nice, place to unwind and then, get prepped for good conversation and talks and experiences, specifically around the JavaScript language and just programming and tinkering in general. I recommend going early.
yeah, I think that's a great thing. There's always the transitioning from work and the normal routine into getting somewhere and I guess if you have a little bit of time to kind of make that shift and relax, I think that really makes a big difference, rather than just being thrust into things, you know, as soon as you get off the plane or something, you know. So
right. So that I completely agree. So. Yeah, it took me a couple of days. We were down there for an extended period, but it took me a couple of days to really kind of unwind and get focused, and then I was able to, you know, get all the fun stuff. You go to a place like this, and I guess I should describe it. You've got this amazing beach. You've got this amazing hotel, pools, and this amazing canopy of trees, golf courses. It's just paradise. And I can imagine if I came on the night before, all I would think about the whole time I was there was, I've got to get out and enjoy this scenery. And what am I doing in this room?
Yeah.
You know, listening to these talks. Now, of course, JSConf, the organizers do an amazing job of giving you all of the opportunities you can to get out and to mingle. You know, and that facility really does lend itself to just kind of natural conversation. You've got the pool. And you've got the fireplaces that are around the pool and plenty of chairs and tables and the beach and all that good stuff. I think that venue really lends itself to that.
Yeah.
To just having the impromptu conversations as you're going to get your beach towel. You know, I mean, it's amazing. You can walk down the hall and see any, you know, celebrity in our community that you'd like.
And
you know, anyway, back to unwinding, but you know, getting there early, I had a chance to unwind, so I wasn't in that room going, I've got to be out there.
So. Right. Yeah, that's great. Yeah, it does. It really, you know, and even the just you said there, you know, there's plenty of places to gather and to just, you know, hang out. You know, I remember that one of the first nights that we got there this year, I think it was right before the conference started, we were hanging out at, you know, just by the pool there, or, you know, or up up by the hotel, you know, just in under the stars, you know, just talking about JavaScript and life and all kinds of things. So it's a neat place to meet. So
yeah, and what was cool was that while we were around there, you could start to see the laptops, the glow of laptops appearing. And they remained right there until that time. So you really had kind of these hack sessions that could, you know, I imagine that's what they were. I wasn't involved in one of those under the stars, unfortunately, but you could imagine that that's what they were. They were just tinkering with things, and but they were in more of a natural environment rather than what you typically think of a hallway track at a conference, where you're literally in the hallway, and they've had to close all the conference rooms and things like that. It really lent the venue and the openness and the things to talk about too. So I mean, when you met someone that you had never, you know, you walk up to a group of people, you know, they're attendees, but you don't have a talking point normally, right? And this, other if they don't have a logo or something that you can lead with, but with that venue, you just have everything. You could say, hey, have you guys been to the beach, or did you go on the Segway stuff? Did you, you know?
Yeah.
There's, you know, so
many different types of activities and things for the family and for everybody. So it's pretty neat. So
So
we kicked things off. I guess it was Tuesday night. They had the
we kicked things off on Monday.
Yeah, the Monday was there was another CSS Conf. I think CSS Conf Monday night. There was a welcome party for that. And then I think Tuesday day was actually CSS Conf. It was the day before, and so then there was a lot of some of the attendees had went to that to, you know, to learn about all the latest things in CSS and transitions and all things there. And then Tuesday night, then they had a kind of a combined. It was like an after party for CSS Conf and a pre-party for JS Conf, kind of a welcome reception. And this was on the beach. And so what were your thoughts on the welcome reception there?
Oh, it was awesome. I love the way that they did that, where you could kind of mesh the two crowds. and it was just, I don't know, it was interesting. I met a lot of people that I wouldn't have otherwise met because we were just on a beach. It's kind of telling everybody to go in this room and make friends, right? Well, yeah. It's kind of hard if you stick them in a room, right? But yeah. You put them on a beach, you know, and it was sunset, and it was, you know, they had great food, and it was just a real nice time to be able to just, you know, kind of mingle and
yeah,
identify people that you'd never met. I met Rick Waldron for the first time. I didn't recognize him. he didn't have a lightsaber from his
right. Yeah,
from his little Twitter avatar. So yeah. I was like, "Who is that?" And he's like, "That's Rick Waldron." So anyway, but
yeah,
yeah. So it's and you can make mistakes like that and be forgiven on a beach. So.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, I remember the same thing. It was just, you know, it's a beautiful looking out at the sunset, and you know, and just, you know, they have the, you know, the little tents kind of set up with the food and stuff, you know, all over there, and yeah, just, you know, just had the Jamaican band, I think, playing the, you know, the metal drums or whatever, and yeah, it was just, you know, kind of a neat place to. I guess kick things off or wrap things up if you were leaving, you know, after CSS Comp. So, but yeah, it was
sure. And I like the way they had. Oh, go ahead.
I just really liked it. I got to meet a lot of, you know, many new friends, and actually it was funny because, you know, some of the people that that we ended up meeting, you know, that night, we saw them like every day, you know, so the rest of the conference.
Exactly.
You know, right. out of 600 and some people or whatever, you know, it was amazing to find you know, again and again these you know, common friends that were, you know, were great. So
right, I was gonna say that the table we sat at, they had the thing that I really liked was they had these tables that were on the beach, and so you would just get your hors d'oeuvres and sit down.
Yeah.
And then someone would join you and someone else would join you and all that, and so you're kind of, it's like at a wedding, right? You
yeah.
just end up next to people, and
yeah.
conversations develop, and you identify where you're from, and then you've got a connection point. And just like you said, the people we met at that table, I actually attended one of the events that we'll talk about in a minute on the Thursday of the conference with him. That uh-huh. was really cool, and I would have never we paired up, and he helped me, and I helped him, and
yeah,
you know, it kind of helped solidify the friendship a little bit more, and it started. You can trace it back and exactly pinpoint where it was. It was on that beach.
Yeah, so, yeah, and yeah, me too. Yeah, I mean, a couple that first came and sat down with us was Brad and Anastasia, and I just really enjoyed time
Absolutely.
With them. So yeah,
Brad was my partner in crime, I guess, with the
that's
with,
great.
With the NodeBots event. So
yeah. So then we had a good night's sleep, and then Wednesday morning we kicked off the official tracks of the conference and that. So we had to start out with a nice breakfast, and that was wonderful. A lot of variety in the breakfast there, which I always enjoy.
It was.
So,
yeah. There's one thing about that venue is that they know how to deliver the right food. It's amazing. They actually have chefs that are on staff that really know what they're doing. So
yeah,
everything was tasty.
And you know, and it's kind of neat with the weather being good that you can eat your breakfast outside if you want, you know, and which is always always fun. It's, you know, it's just something different, and
right.
You know, and stuff. So that was I did that several days. So yeah, so then we got ready for the talks, and they had a great set of tracks. I mean, there was basically three tracks. The main track, the Houston track, was the kind of the curated content that Chris and company had kind of went through and the committee and chosen. And then there was the Cape Canaveral track, which was more, I guess, community driven. People could send in talks that they wanted, and the community voted on them and chose them. And then finally, there was a training track for anybody that wanted to learn more skills, you know, just and those are, you know, longer presentations or talks, you know, where they can really go in and they get some hands on and, you know, even some help if they need it, you know, and all that. So really, they kind of cover it all there with those three types of tracks. So it's pretty neat.
Right. And then there was always the hallway track, too. So
yeah. Yep. You know, there's always that. So let's look. Let's go through the schedule and kind of talk about some of our favorite talks and things that we remember. So looking down the schedule there, I guess I was in the Neil Green's talk when he was talking about writing custom DSLs, and thought that was well done. He basically gave a lot of different choices on how you can build DSLs, and he talked about some of the different tools you can use, and basically had ideas for how things can, you can start out, things can be more programmatic looking, or you can get more and more fancy and be more English looking DSLs. And so that was kind of, it kind of showed both ends of the spectrum there.
Yeah. My takeaway from that talk was definitely the emojis, that you could build.
So. Yeah. Yeah.
It's that was a very interesting talk, emojis in code. So.
Yeah. So then the next talk I went to, they got such a cool name, CylonJS. So I just had to find out what that was all about. So I went to see Ron Evans, and his partner there was helping him. And yeah, they really I was amazed. The CylonJS is a project that kind of makes it easier. I guess it gives you a little abstraction to be able to do robotics and things, especially with JavaScript. And so it's kind of a framework, and they really kind of try to make adapters over each of these different types of devices. And so then they started out, kind of at the, simple, and just started building on that and changing things out. And it was amazing because, there are all these different types of devices, and it was a matter of changing a couple lines of code or config to basically boot something else up and then add it into the mix.
Right.
And then, as they went on, they had more and more things like working together and, communicating across, across the code with each other. And it was kind of neat because we had, there was a one point where we had these Sphero balls that were your programmatic. You can control them. They'll roll around or change colors and different things. And then he had I think it was a leap motion hand sensor type thing, and basically by waving your hand you could tell the balls what to do and change colors and all that kind of stuff. We had drones, they were controlling drones and different things, they would all be synchronized and that. It was just there was a variety of things there where they did something with the Game of Life or something, Conway's Game of Life with those little those balls where they run into contact with each other, then a sensor would know
exactly.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So
it was a really powerful display of what you can do with JavaScript and some electronics these days and microcontrollers. It's very, very interesting framework. I've played around with it a little bit, and it's definitely something to watch as we get into that advanced. Well, I still think robotics and controlling things with JavaScript, I think we've got a long way to go before Skynet or anything that's going to take over. So I'm definitely assured that humans will be in control for a little while longer than robots, but it's amazing what you can do with these devices right now.
Yeah,
with a little bit of JavaScript and the asynchronous nature that it brings.
Yeah, yeah, and I think it was last year that we were sitting in Raquel Velez's talk about Nodebots or something of that.
Yeah,
and she really explained, how. Like JavaScript has just kind of changed the whole landscape with robots and things. Because you don't have to get out the compilers for the C or C++ and use these old APIs that are difficult to use and people to that are beginners hard to understand. And so something like JavaScript, which you can a little bit familiar with maybe from your browser or from doing some small code. Doesn't require a compiler, the interfaces are, you can pretty much just fire things up and start using things. So, I mean, it's kind of made, it's brought it to a whole new level of accessibility for people for all of all types, rather than just the, instead of the scientists or the, you know, the career programmers, it can actually be available to everybody. So
yeah, it's made it less intimidating. I have not been interested in robotics or anything like that, so I thought, and then bringing this down to my level, well, not necessarily bringing it to me where I'm at. I know JavaScript. I'm able to interface with it, and it just these kind of approaches allow me to iterate on things and do things that I wasn't really I didn't think I was interested in before. So, yeah. It also, the asynchronous nature, I'll say it again, just that really, because, and I got the same from her talk, 2013 JSConf, where, you know, it really does lend itself to a robot, because you may have multiple servos that are turning or that need to turn, and one shouldn't hold up the other. It's in certain instances. The asynchronous nature is very appropriate for that application to robotics.
Yeah.
So I was very excited to see that talk and all the different uses for the Sphero, the Node Copters, etc. I mean, they just brought everything that was available out and just said, "Here's what you can do, guys, and gals, right?
Yeah.
So here's what you can do. This is, everybody stand up and take notice. This is this is what it is, and here's our attempt to help you do that." So
yeah, and it was amazing amazing to see them do so much in a short time, because this was these were like half hour talks, so that includes a little bit of setup time, so 5 minutes or so.
So plus live demos.
Yeah. So you're down to, 25 minutes or so, max. And yeah, they had all this hardware to fire up and it was amazing to see all that, but that just got you excited, to see what you could do that quickly. And they really talked about all, they showed it and they talked about it and showed code, and it was really good. So definitely, check out that video if you haven't seen it. And I guess another kind of side thing that I think is really interesting about the conference is they mentioned it at the beginning is the Tesla. So I guess the Tesla having JavaScript actually run on a chip. So those were, I think, launched at the conference, or they were at least giving out some a few early editions or something at the conference there. So that's pretty awesome.
They had some to play with at the Cylon JS booth at the NodeBots event.
Okay.
I didn't play with one, but I saw a number of people playing with them. I'm actually going to get my first hands-on look at one tomorrow night. So I'll certainly let you know
how
it is. But
yeah,
I'm very intrigued by that as well, because with Arduino and with the Spark that they gave us in our astronaut bags, I guess that's what they were.
Our
conference gift bags were shiny silver bags.
Yeah. Kind of reminded me of the astronaut ice cream bar bags, or something like that kind of material. You tear it open and you get your goodies in there.
Those would have been a great touch. There would have been millions and millions of tweets about that if there were astronaut ice cream in our bag.
Right.
But included in that was the Spark Core, which is literally a connected chip that you literally can fire it up and it connect it to the network you're on, and you can write C code that goes on that will update an API. Now, of course, that's as far as I've gotten, and I can imagine if I were able to take that script that's talking to the C code or the value that was sent by the API or to the API from that C code on the chip. If I were able to take that code and put it on the device, the chip itself, that would be amazing. So,
yeah.
I think they've got a lot of things there. And around the conference, if you mentioned Tesla, you just saw this look of pleasure on the person's face, like, that is going to be cool.
Yeah.
If I recall correctly, they weren't really out at the time. They are shipping now.
Okay.
But I think, like you were saying, they launched them there. But
yeah.
Yeah, definitely something to watch.
Yeah, so that's only going to just be more and more available to everybody, and you know, and it's great to have all this different support for things with hardware. And yeah, I know you mentioned the Spark Core. You know, you were explaining it to me a little bit later that there's all these different types of sensors. I mean, all types of things that you can wire together in that little box that we got. And
That's really cool. There's temperature sensors, which I got working while I was at the conference during the NodeBots event. There's, I'm going to butcher, there's a light sensor. It's not called that. There's there's servos. There are all kinds of little things in there. I think it comes with about 10 different sensors. But you can literally plug them in a breadboard and with a little bit of instruction on how, you know, you need a ground and you need a power source and a little bit of instruction on how to set that up. And you've got something that you, or at least someone like myself that was always software. I didn't think I could ever do anything like that, but I've got a couple of little pet projects with this little breadboard and the Spark Core and a few sensors to help solve a need for someone.
Yeah. That's great.
Yeah. Highly recommend looking into one of those.
Yeah, and I think you know, Chris has mentioned that before, that he's always wanted to kind of let people try out using hardware, because it's something that a lot of people enjoy once they try it, and you don't know how, you know, you think it's going to be real hard, but once you get into it, you find out, you know, with these different tools, it's not too bad, and you know, and these new APIs and that make it easier. So so that's great.
Yeah.
So next talk, I think that, you know, I mentioned or I went to was I went to Travell Perkins, and he talked about battle hardening Node.js for the enterprise. And so he had a lot of good information from their work at FidSafe, Fidelity. And it was, you know, it was a lot of similar things to kind of, you know, some of the things that we've been doing at MasterCard. So I certainly, you know, had a lot of, compared notes there with security and making things run fast and scale up to large scale. And so that was really good, keeping things safe. Then there was a NodeBots Live event with Raquel. Did you get to see that one with her? Or
I didn't.
This year?
I missed that. It was also during a break time, so I missed that. But
There was a little bit of things got a little bit out of sync with the tracks there, so it made it a little difficult to get back and forth for parts of the conference. But they eventually got that synced up and it worked better. But that can happen. It can happen with any conference. Nico Bavacqua, who's actually writing a book now called JavaScript Application Design.
Yeah.
I got an early access copy of that, and I was actually able to get an interview with him at the conference. So I've got working on a podcast to get that out. His talk was great. He had a lot of good ideas on tooling and things that you can use with JavaScript. I think one of his kind of precepts is build first. So get everything set up so that you can build your system completely, you know, out, so that there's no, you know, everything is kind of automated and you've got tooling around all the stuff. So you're not wasting a lot of time, you know, concatenating things, and you can automate a lot of that stuff nowadays, and then you can run tests on it and you can make sure it's all working together.
Right. Yeah, it was a great talk. The thing I really liked about his presentation of the material was that he talked about Grunt and Gulp and NPM, but he talked about them in a, if you're presented with this, if you're presented with that. So it wasn't really a use one over the other. He did highlight some of their noted drawbacks where there were, you know, if one of them was faster than the other in certain areas. But he presented a view of each tool and showed its strengths and its weakness. Most of the tools don't have weaknesses. Grunt is, it's got just about everything that you can need. And Gulp is slowly catching up with that community. I think they both strike they strike our community by the people that are there at that moment. So mm-hmm. there were those of us that started out with Grunt because that was the only thing that was there, right?
Yeah.
And now there's Gulp, and yeah, it's got great syntax, and yes, I can see how certain things are faster.
Yeah.
Am I converting all my Grunt files over to Gulp files? No. Am I avoiding a project because it has a Gulp file? Absolutely not. So,
right.
And then one of the things that I really took, his talk detailed how you can use NPM as your tooling, you know, so you can literally use that package JSON and highlight a couple of the attributes in there that will do things for you.
Mm-hmm.
I'll leave any details to watching the talk or reading his book, but I agree with his approach, and I had a chance to talk with him in depth at one of the dinners, and his ideas are right in that you've got to set up your environment. Thinking about the future of where these assets are going to end up, how is everything going to come together? Because that is going to affect how you're going to build it and structure it. And it seems like in the web, we've always played catch up, where we've built all of this CSS and JavaScript, all these assets, and then years and years went by, and then things in the Rails community, like the asset pipeline, came along, and it's named something else in other languages and frameworks, but essentially it's, we should have,
right.
We've got performance we've got to keep in mind. And this approach that he went through with these tools about, thinking, are you going to deliver this via mobile? And get your minification set up. Do you need, to build an image, a CSS sprite? Do you need, to trim down things? Do you need to only include certain things in certain areas? All of this kind of, what used to be done as an afterthought, this is now true advice for anyone building something, including myself. I think it just reiterates, I need to think about that now, because, if I go through and structure things and don't think about how it's going to end up, I may be, shooting myself in the foot. So,
yeah. And I think, and it helps you, if you end up working with a team, then it helps the team as well. And, kind of these things, once you get them set up one time, then mm-hmm. you can kind of learn from that, and the next project can build on what you learned in the past project. And, you may even do things slightly different, but at least you're kind of, you're never starting over, and you're kind of, things are, you got these building blocks that have started you out, and you can easily add things into the mix. Once you have something, once you have some tooling in place, then you can easily add, minification, and you can add, uglifying or removing dead code, and, all those types of things. It's just another, another thing in the pipeline. So lots of cool stuff there.
Yeah. And just establishing a workflow. That's one of the main things. It's part of his talk description, but I'm a huge believer in placing a workflow in front of somebody, or just, it may not be the right workflow at the time, or you may have to adjust it, but by simply defining that, you're 75% of the way there.
Mm-hmm.
You've at least got something to work with. So whereas, if you didn't have a framework or something like that, which defines a workflow or buckets for you to put things in, folders, all that kind of stuff, you've got a blank canvas. And a lot of us, myself included, get kind of nervous when I see a blank canvas, because I don't know what to do. But you give me a little bit of structure, you give me a little workflow, and I know exactly what to do. So to your point about with a team, et cetera, once you bring someone on and you've got a file that, they can instantly look down it and digest, how are we, what are we doing to ensure this is deliverable? You can answer all those questions and something like that. So
awesome. So what was your next favorite talker that you had on your list there, or things that you've attended or remember from the conference?
I'm not certain what talk this was in, but I heard a lot. This was just something I wasn't aware of before JSConf, and I'm not sure if it was in his talk. He may have mentioned Browserify. Mm-hmm. He may not, but I had not heard of Browserify with the bullhorn that I did at JSConf.
I had seen
it in the Twitter stream. I had seen it on Hacker News, et cetera, but I hadn't really understood what it was. So that really, that was kind of the, I believe that was in or around his talk.
He definitely mentioned it in the talk, I believe. And it kept coming up. I mean, that was one of the tools that people referenced again and again as something that's just making things easier. You know, I mean, there's just we in the Node community have always enjoyed NPM and how, you know, the ability to have dependencies and install things, and Browserify just kind of, you know, by it walking your dependency tree and finding the code that needs to be pulled and compiling it all together in one file, you know, that's just that's very, very slick and very, very nice compared to something, you know, that you know, like RequireJS, which just takes more setup. You know, there's just more more moving parts there to set up, and that you know, it can do different things. But, you know, for a lot of things, Browserify does what you need. And so many people have bought into, you know, or tried that out and found that, it's a great tool for the toolkit there.
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, so answering your question, the next talk that I attended was actually right after Nico's, and it was amazing. It was by Mark DeMarco on user interface algorithms. And I was really intrigued. I like playing with the UI these days. I use Angular a lot, and Knockout for binding. And I've started playing with React a bunch this year. This really spoke to me. I was like, what are these algorithms? What cool things am I going to find out? And he introduced us to the Verneuil diagram, which is made famous in our world by the infamous Amazon flyout menus. I've always noticed how amazingly stable those menus are. When you go to Amazon and you down the right, the left-hand side, you navigate to Kindle and it flies out, and it's extremely stable. I've actually had several designers say, let's go to Amazon, let me show you these menus. And I never knew exactly what the secret was, but his talk was absolutely amazing. And it's one of those talks that I'm going to remember, and I'm going to use that concept to further my career and get through projects that need more stability. But he implements this Verneuil diagram and how it relates to the mouse pointer. So he goes into a lot of backstory about how that came up and how it was named. I'll save that for the viewers that want to watch the talk. But man, it was. What did you think of that? Had you ever
seen
that?
I was with Nico after his talk to do a quick interview, and so I missed the talk live, but then I did go back and see the video later, and it was amazing, and some of the way they were using that algorithm to detect, you know, you could even use this on different shapes, you know, so they were actually, he was showing, I think, was it a map of the United States or a map of the world or something? And you would hover over things and it would detect, you know, where, you know, the closest one, you know, and you didn't have to be in it. You could actually be it was the nearest, thing. And so it was pretty neat how that algorithm would allow you to, you know, to have a really nice user interface and, you know, really nice, feel to what you did.
Yeah, I believe you were you're remembering the election results.
Yeah.
The New York Times did.
That's it. Yep.
That was that kind of, and I call it stability. But when you're, when you're in a user interface like that, and you have to, you want something other than square boxes that the browser provides us. You know.
Yeah.
A lot of us will code up, you know, these crazy watching algorithm padding kind of things, you know, breaking the rules. And this actually solves the problem and solves it in really the most efficient way. So, and it's all over the place. Once you start looking, it really is all over the place. Just like the New York Times. So yeah, it's, yeah. That was one of the talks that's worth the conference for me.
Yeah.
Because I got something out of that that I don't know, if I would ever have run across it, just in my daily life. So,
yeah. Yeah. And that is, I think, the beauty of, you know, the breadth of the topics that, Chris, they kind of had in these talks. I mean, they're just all over the place. So you couldn't help but, you know, just seeing things that you wouldn't normally see at a normal conference. I mean, it was just amazing to have the, you know, the breadth of these things. So, but, yeah, so, I guess the next talk that I went to was, I think I saw Nick Bray's talk on, native code on the web, and he was, basically talking, you know, showing how we can, use different tools to run native code, and you know, is it a good thing, is it a bad thing? I mean, there was you know, some debating about, you know, that, and he kind of talked through a lot of those ideas and just you know, just a variety of ways that we can interface with you know, with native code, and you know, for things that need it. And there was, he mentioned that he had different libraries that you could use to bridge the gap, I guess, between C++ or these other VMs and things. And so that was kind of neat, and you know, and it dealt with a lot of the issues of multi-threaded programming and memory models and that kind of stuff. So pretty interesting, pretty good talk. I guess I came in at the end of Montage.js, but that was pretty interesting. The composable web front-end web applications with Montage, and they actually have a designer, I think, that you can build these things and test them and all that. And that was a pretty neat talk. Neat to see where things are going with that.
Yeah, I'd actually met one of those guys last year. I didn't meet Ryan, who gave the talk, but one of his coworkers, or someone that was, as the framework was growing. It seems to play well with other frameworks, but it also gives you the ability to build kind of live components within itself. That's the takeaway that I got. It's definitely something on my kind of my, you know, when I have a Saturday evening, you know, kind of pull that out and play around with it. Because I think it has a feel of something that we didn't necessarily want with, or I didn't think I wanted with Angular or with Knockout or data bindings, you know, so forth. Back in the days when Backbone was, you know, and jQuery spaghetti, then Backbone, right? That was all the rage. That was how we built stuff. We saw these forward-thinking frameworks, and it kind of got a little like, I don't know if I ever want to do that. And then once you buy into the magic and the savings and the defaults that are put out there, then, you know, you can learn to reap the benefits. So I can see this in a couple of years being something that's very you know, it rolls off the tongue pretty easily. Hey, have you checked out Montage.js? So
yeah, there was kind of a theme that we've seen at the conference, you know, modularity, you know, was a common word, keeping things, you know, composable in small modules that you can put together and build up bigger and bigger things. And, you know, with Montage as well as other things, you know, it was, you know, we're seeing more and more with web components and Angular directives and, you know, all of these different types of things where you can build up, taking small primitives, build on them, piece them together, have something more, you know, bigger and bigger. And I think that, you know, that's kind of, we, you know, we found as a community, that's, those are good ways to build things, you know, to abstract and that. But yet at the simplest level, they're, you know, they're small. The pieces inside are small, and you can easily go in and change them out, or, you know, tweak them or whatever. And so that's kind of the good thing too, is you're not stuck with one big, huge thing that's hard to modify. You don't have this big monolith. You've got smaller things that are composed together. So
absolutely. And the other thing I'll say about Montage was that they borrowed from existing frameworks and templating languages, which is a big thing. The thing I remember the most is that their templating reminded me of Handlebars or Mustache or Angular. So when you're in something, you don't have to remember yet another syntax for delivering variables, expressions, etc. Their framework was very expression driven, and you didn't even, in most cases, you didn't have to write the controller code in the view, or the controller code in a controller. You could do that in the view, and it was very readable and digestible. Mm-hmm. And so instantly when you gave that piece to a designer or another developer, they could have a view of whatever it was right in that, in what they were looking at. So I think this is definitely something to watch. I'm interested to see some first apps that really take it and do something with it. I know their app, the editor that they demoed and that you can play with, is completely written in Montage. And so it's just, I mean, I'm excited to see what can come out of that.
So. Yeah, me too. Me too. So what's another talk that you you found pretty interesting at the first day?
I thought the talk about playing DVDs in JavaScript was just amazing. So it's going to be a real problem, in my opinion, because we have all of this media, right? And we're slowly getting away from laptops that have those players. So what do you do, right? You archive them, right? We'll have all these DVDs that are archived on, you know, all these hard drives, and we may or may not be able to play them in certain things. And so this was GC Marty's experiment in if he could play a DVD in the folder structure and so forth with JavaScript. That's the kind of thing that I really think, you can guarantee to see. I knew I was going to see a talk like this, something that I had it was not even on my radar, you know, and this is really cool. What did you think of doing that? Would you ever have a need?
Yeah, you know, I had
to play your,
I didn't think you could do that. So it was pretty. It was pretty amazing to see how far, you know, to see him get through it, and make it work. I mean, because you know, I just thought that there was some stuff in there that you would just need C++ or you know something running hardware to work with. But he got it all running in JavaScript, and and it was amazing to see how he accomplished it. He went through the whole story, so it was pretty cool.
Yeah. It was. It was really, really sharp. I highly recommend checking out that talk. So,
and I guess another talk that afternoon was unshackling JavaScript with macros, James Long, and I believe he showed a lot of different ways that we can basically customize JavaScript now, or even start to use some ES6. Macros and that. So he actually went through and talked about macros that would basically implement some of the ES6 features, and that was kind of neat. You can certainly mix in things you want to try out, and he used Sweet.js and other things to demonstrate that. He added in some things about like function tracing and native pattern matching, and it was pretty good.
Yeah, it was a real deep dive into Sweet.js, we all know that you can get a shim and plug it in and you can take advantage of it, but kind of going down into that and explaining what it's doing and why you would want to do that was a really good show of how you could begin to play with what is coming, and mm-hmm. then I'm not 100% sure if Sweet.js is a production quality polyfill, which I'm going to call it, or shim that you can use now, but I'll have to research that, but
yeah, I'm not sure either. I think there are people that are using Suite.js, you know, from what I understand, you know, for different types of projects and things. And I, you know, it can basically kind of fill things in. You know, it's kind of funny because I think Brendan Eich talks about the fact that one of his coworkers or something, they were basically wanting to add macros to the language, because then that'd be the last thing they'd have to implement. Everybody else could do everything with macros, you know. I mean, so that was kind of the joke, you know, or whatever. But we've never really got macros, you know. So but now Suite.js is kind of trying to fill that in. So yeah, I'm not sure the level of the code or what kind of complexity it would create. But certainly something checking out. And certainly if you're trying to evaluate some things, how it will maybe clean up your code and maybe for the future use, you know, when these features are native, then that's certainly a good thing to play with. So,
yeah, absolutely. It's definitely something to watch out for.
Another talk I liked was Marco Rogers talked about finding patterns across front-end frameworks. And, you know, again, a lot of it was kind of just reinforcing some of the same stuff that we've been hearing and, you know, some of the modularity, you know, some of the, you know, using Browserify for, you know, for loading things, just the whole, you know, the whole modularity thing of doing one thing well, you know, and being able to compose things together and, you know, to make more complicated things.
Yeah. I loved his demo on all of the different frameworks. He took Backbone, he took React, he took Angular, he took Ember. And he kind of showed the same code side by side. And he didn't really say, you should use this, you should use that. But he gave each their own kind of score throughout. And he was able to, you know, kind of give you a feel for if that was your type of framework or not. So you didn't have to kind of deep dive. And some of it was, you know, if you only cared about the number of lines of code, you could certainly see which one won that, right? But he gave a balanced review, in my opinion, of all the different options that are there, and just identified that, hey, we're all building frameworks. You know, everybody is. Every company is building their own framework. If they're not, even if they are using a specific framework, they tend to do that. So because you start with an established workflow and then build off of that. So I was really happy to see that kind of balanced comparison. So,
yeah, I know. I know there was another talk similar. I mean, that had some similar. Ryan Florence, I think, gave. I think it was called Emberacular. I'm trying to look it up here.
Exactly.
It's on the second day. Emberacular, right. Actor Bourbon.
Right.
It was a kind of a combination of, like you said, of showing the different frameworks, you know, and going through and what, you know, their pros and the cons and the kind of their strengths and their, you know, and just kind of, you know, helping people try to make an educated guess on when to use this versus that and that. So yeah, very, very good stuff. Very, very helpful. Yeah. Another talk in that same day was on real-time satellite tracking in the browser. Another one of those ones that kind of blew my mind, you know, and with David Calhoun, and that was pretty interesting, you know, just being able to, I guess, you know, it was really just bringing it all down to the browser and you know, I guess we were doing real-time satellite positions using leaflet JS and satellite JS. And I remember the satellite JS, I think it believed it really kind of made some of the concepts of orbital mechanics easier. It didn't end up being such a hard math or whatever. It was a lot easier to deal with and that. So, but yeah. Lots of good stuff. Talked about map projections and WebGL and just you know, just a good talk if you want to see what can be done in the browser with satellites and that. And then I guess kind of wrapping up this first day. Let's see, we had
my last talk from that day was probably one of the funniest talks I've ever seen. It was Jen Schiffer talked about What's the harm in sorting? This was the name of her talk. What's the harm in hoarding? The harm in sorting, sanitizing inputs for more optimized JavaScript. And in her talk, she introduced the world to Jort Sort, which was her comedic attempt at our and poking fun at developers for always wanting things to be the newest, the hottest. You want it compact. You want it
fast. Yeah.
Fast. Yeah. I mean, it was. It was amazing. The entire crowd was just crying.
Yeah. She's definitely got a way that she delivers the, you know, connects with the audience, and it's just something to see, you know. Jen's something else, and yeah, it's, you know, the humor and the satire and the irony, and you know, it just, yeah, it was all kind of wrapped in there. You couldn't, yeah, help but laugh, you know. And a lot of times we're laughing at ourselves, you know, so it's
absolutely
kind of cool.
Yeah, and she had some very valid points. If you go back and watch that talk, you can really understand, you know, it's poking fun, but it's also being extremely real. Okay, well, we don't have to jump to the next framework as soon as it's out. We don't have to re-implement things because of, personal biases towards the way the code looks or so forth. There's a lot of things that you can glean from her, the fun she made of developers that are pretty true. I mean, there's some points in there. So
yeah, awesome.
Yeah.
Well, that's a good spot to break for our for this podcast, Kevin. And just appreciate you you joining me today to reminisce about JSConf 2014. And we'll plan on picking this up again with the next day and continuing forward on our journey through JSConf. So, Kevin, thanks for your time. Thanks for joining me tonight.
Thanks, Jeff.
I hope you've enjoyed Reflections of JSConf 2014, Part 1, with my friend, Kevin Old. I would encourage you to check out some of the videos. The links and show notes are available at codewinds.com/12. If you would like to keep up on the latest in web developer news and training, follow me on codewinds.com, where I have a podcast, blog, and video training covering Node and JavaScript. Until next time, this is Jeff Barczewski with CodeWinds. Music by AudioNautix.com.